Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Man there trying to stop Drogba getting himself into further trouble. It's a fucking disgrace.
Oh, it's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was! Carlos Alberto!
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maldano smokes and...
Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan! Dennis Bergkamp!
Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp!
Oh! Frank de Boer speelt de bal naar Dennis Bergkamp! Die neemt de bal feilloos aan! En hij schiet de bal erin!
Hallo? And welcome to this, another episode of the Scoreless Thriller Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my trusty assistant manager, Leon. How are you doing?
Cheers, I'm good.
And we've got somebody returning for their second appearance on the podcast. Not quite a permanent signing, but maybe a loan signing. Colbin, welcome again. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's great to be back.
Today on the podcast, we are going to be discussing a team which has been described as one of the best teams ever to not win the World Cup. The Brazil team from 1982, and we've just watched the game against Italy, which a game which has been viewed as a tragedy, where they went out of the World Cup. Do you have any initial reactions to watching the game?
I just loved Zico.
Yeah, Zico was an incredible player. Yeah, he was completely bossing the game.
Yeah, it was kind of incredible watching the game, because beforehand I kind of had thought that the game would be kind of more run through Socrates, because I think like Socrates played a bit deeper. It's kind of like the number eight, and therefore that he would be able to like putting the ball forward for Zico. But Zico seemed to just be like,
he was on fire.
Everything, just like all this kind of short passes and everything, and like putting in different connections and stuff. It's like mixing all the play.
His
dribbling and everything. Yeah, it was crazy. So on this podcast, I like to give my guest a little trivia question. So I think the last time you were on, I think Colbin, you won that one, right?
Yeah, I did.
I think this is going to be...
Precious on me.
This is going to be a pretty tough one. I don't think you stand any chance to get it. But anyway, okay. In one of the World Cup games, France were playing against Kuwait. And France were leading 3-1. And...
So specific.
I don't believe it.
You're both looking at your computer, so I'm worried that you've got this story at hand, but anyway, okay.
Not only the list of qualified teams. Okay, so this is fair. This is okay.
Yeah, maybe I should make sure that every single World Cup game, every World Cup, one of these questions has something to do with New Zealand.
But that was my first World Cup. Default answer: New Zealand.
Okay. So I'm gonna have to set the scene. So it's 3-1 to France, and they have scored again to make it 4-1. But if this goal is eventually disallowed and not counted, and what I want to know is, what led to this goal being disallowed? Somebody who should not have interfered did to stop this goal counting.
Oh, a ball boy.
Do you know it?
No, I have no idea.
Oh, you sounded so confident.
I felt confident.
Oh, the ball boy, yeah. Or the coach. The coach did something. What might he have done?
No. I mean, it could have been...
Somebody came onto the pitch to argue, and as a result, the goal was disallowed.
Because he or she convinced the referee?
Yeah.
Oh. Whoa. I've never heard of that.
No, that's very impressive.
Convinced the referee didn't count. Could have been the coach themselves.
FIFA president. Right from the ranks.
No, I think you've got a stunt on this one.
Okay, so one final guess. One final guess each.
Was not the ball boy.
Came onto the pitch. Just some random assistant.
You were in the... You said FIFA, not FIFA president.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. Fair enough. The president of a country that participated. So was it... It was France against...
Kuwait.
Was it the Kuwait president that was doing fair play and said that, nah, this was the goal?
Okay, so that's your guess. What is your final guess?
Well, I think French president would be...
President
you know,
of the...
safer bet.
What's the, like, the name of the... Like, UEFA's Europe. What's the name of the one that would be Africa for Kuwait?
I don't know.
Is it Asia?
Oh, so they're in Asia. That's a minus point.
That's a minus point.
Yeah, that's a minus point.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
okay. It has to be.
Yeah, that's bad.
So, yeah, you're not going to get it. Anyway, so what happened was France had scored, but while they had been scoring, in the process of scoring, the Arab team, the Kuwait, had stopped playing because they thought they'd heard a mysterious sort of whistle in the ground. And they were kind of remonstrating and complaining to the referee. And then Prince Fahid, the Kuwaiti FA president, who was at the ground, came down from the stands and argued with the referee, said the team would not carry on playing unless this was changed. Ooh. And eventually the referee disallowed the goal.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think my guess was not that off.
No, I think you get maybe half a point.
Yeah.
So I'm half a point in the league now, right? Because it's minus 1 point.
Yeah.
But the Africa guess.
Come on. Right. No, it's hard.
You're not going to be going on a geography podcast.
No. But come on, they don't always line up with the geography, these arbitrary...
arbitrary things. But yeah, and the referee, Miroslav Stupa, was banned from refereeing after this for changing his decision. Oh. And the prince was fined the sum of £8,000, which I'm sure annoyed him a lot.
Definitely. That's a bummer.
Yeah. So after our little trivia question, we're going to go back to discussing the Brazilian team. Hello, this is Alex here from the Scoreless Thriller podcast. If you've enjoyed the podcast so far, please give us a like on Facebook at the Scoreless Thriller podcast, or else follow us on Twitter. And remember to subscribe on your favorite podcast app to keep up to date with our coming podcasts. Now, enjoy the show. So, Leon, what do you think makes this Brazilian team sort of so memorable, or why is it sort of captured people's imagination for so long, even though they didn't even make a semi-final of a World Cup?
It's definitely the flamboyant play style and the creativity and the passes, the triangles they make. It's very clear, it's very beautiful, and you just gotta love it, man. When you see it, you love it.
Mm. Yeah, I have this quote from this Argentinian coach who was at the World Cup, and he has this line about the beauty of their play, and he says that. So he says the ball would arrive in this zone, talking about the midfield, and would then disappear to reappear in the form of a rabbit and also a dove, and then was hidden again from anguished opponents who would look for it in the most unlikely places without being able to find it. Oh. The crowd, myself included, looked at the watch with the intention of making time stand still because we all wanted the game to last forever.
Oh, so metaphoric.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I love it.
And it's I think watching the Brazilian team is just the intricacy of everyone sort of just takes one or two touches and then the ball is moved on to someone else.
Yeah.
And then they just people at Socrates appears somewhere else on the left, and then Zico will appear somewhere else.
And also just the commitment to the attacking football. Everyone's just going forward, they're not playing conservative, the fullbacks are getting right into the game. It's just it's very entertaining.
Yeah, very entertaining and elegant.
Exactly. And after Brazil were knocked out of this World Cup after this game, the football world was kind of in shock. The Spanish newspapers, with this World Cup taking place in Spain, actually said the World Cup is over, and people were just heartbroken that this beautiful team of artists and you know, interesting characters. Like Socrates is famous also for his like political activism. You know, it was very, and at the Corinthian club, they had something called like Corinthians Democracy, which was all about like their players kind of working together on sort of like creating new ideas and everything. And like Socrates is very interesting as well in that he's actually a medically trained doctor as well. And he played made 200 league appearances, and he was still doing his like doctor's exams.
Yeah,
still in his doctor's training in his 20s. So it took place in the second group stage. This tournament had 24 teams. So after the first group stage, they went into the second group stage. And during the group stage, like Brazil had wowed everyone. You know, they'd beaten USSR 2-1 in the first game, just about, and then they'd had a 4-0 and a 4-1 victory, and like. The world was kind of captivated by this artistry and Brazilian like technical brilliance, whereas Italy on the other hand had not had quite the same impact on the football world.
Impressed no one.
they had snuck through by three draws. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And
only got through on goal difference because Cameroon had scored one less goal than them.
Mm.
I was prepared for this as my trivia question, as you got us with this one on the New Zealand last time.
So, I was prepared for that one though too.
Ill prepared.
Yeah.
I do have, actually in the previous World Cup, Brazil in the 1978, they equaled the feat that New Zealand did in the World Cup that we discussed in 2010, where they were both, Brazil went out of the 1978 World Cup because they were unbeaten, as an unbeaten team, the same as New Zealand in 2010.
Oh. Yeah.
Mm, in a game because, it was another one of these group things and... Argentina had to beat Peru in their last game to get to the next round, group stage, and then they beat them 6-0, which most people kind of view as potentially that the Argentinian Junta had some
match fixing issues,
maybe some influence
going on,
some influence on this, and the Brazilian team of 1982, so. Brazil had kind of moved a little bit. Since 1970, they'd struggled a lot at the international stage. So they had like changed a little bit their philosophy and like they were become more counter-attacking and maybe more cynical. And the kind of people thought that they maybe had moved away from their beautiful kind of traditional attacking style of football. But then when Santana took over in 1980, then he began to instigate the kind of change and like, wanting them to be the kind of more synchronicity of the midfield and the passing that they became.
The return to the old style, yeah. Mm.
So the game kicks off and immediately we have the first goal from Rossi. Comes in and the defending isn't great on the first goal.
No.
It's not good throughout the match. Yeah. That's kind of thing. But it was surprising, right? Because Rossi hadn't scored for ages. He was also banned for...
He hadn't scored in the group up to this point, and the Italian media was calling for him to be dropped from the squad.
Yeah. So he broke his duck, as I read. Is that the saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
His 10 match duck.
some good vocabulary.
What would you say in German? You let's say like broke their duck.
No, that's not a thing. No,
okay.
No.
But yeah,
and it's seine Torflaute, which is something completely different.
And he also went into the game with only 8 international goals to his name, so he wasn't exactly a prolific scorer for the Italian team
to
begin with.
Rossi had just returned for a couple of months after he'd served a 2-year of an initial 3-year ban for his involvement in a match fixing scandal in Italy. So he would like. It was a surprise that he was even in the squad, and then now that he's been playing quite poorly in the group stage, it was a kind of surprise that he was still in the team. But he scores in the 5 minutes in where there's a cross from the left, and he just heads it in, and there's like...
Such a beautiful, strong header. Yeah. So straightforward. He just headers it in, goes all in.
There's so many great headers in this game.
Yeah.
There's so much...
They had power.
Yeah, real neck...
They had some jumping power back in the day.
Real neck strength. Yeah. Yeah.
Momentum.
So Rossi scores after 5 minutes, but they're only in lead for 7 minutes. So Colin, do you want to describe maybe the Brazil equaliser with Socrates?
Yeah, the Brazil equaliser came from talking about our favourite player of the match, Zico, from a beautiful pass from him to Socrates. And you get a tight angle on the near post on the right hand side and just slots it in past the goalkeeper, and it's just a beautiful goal. It's just something you'd love to see, and it's just
it's
really Zico
really
running the game.
If you want like a goal to kind of like maybe demonstrate or like kind of like show what this Brazilian team is all about. It's like maybe this one, right?
That's the essence.
Yeah, the, like the little intricate passes and then like slid down the line and then the goal. And then, but also I love the celebration as well, right? You know, Socrates sort of has his two arms up in the air and it's like being mobbed by his players and it's like the other players and it's not like a
very
a
classic.
Like a Jesus figure almost. Just like getting all behind him.
Yeah, so those moments you love where they just cut through them like a knife.
Yeah, exactly.
It's what you wanted to see from the Brazil team, and I'm sure what everyone wanted to see at the time as well. Yeah.
So at this point, with it 1-1, the draw is enough for Brazil to go through onto the semifinals. Italy have to win this game because of Brazil's better goal difference. So the rest of the first half, even though Brazil are level and you know that's enough of a good result for them, like Italy barely have the ball, right? It's very... Yeah.
No, Brazilian is pushing all the way through. They've got the ball, they've got the action going, and there's nothing much happening in favour of Italy during that time.
Yeah, they're also and they're being forced to do some, I'd say, some iffy tackling. You get a nice yellow card for an Italian player for a pretty intense tackle from behind. So they're obviously having to have their work cut out for them in this first half.
You think, where are Italy going to get like a goal from or create something with a goal? They've got no possession really, not really able to build much pressure, and then the goal where they take the lead again is horrible.
It's special,
So Cerezo on the right hand side just plays a square ball pass,
which is like amateur league knowledge. Yeah. I don't do this. never. As a defender,
getting told this as an 8-year-old, never pass across your own box. I guess he wasn't technically in the box, the ball was just outside, but it was about as
and
bad as
Rossi
it could
grabs
be.
It and goes through, just goes through and scores. But also I think the goalkeeper is, I mean, the shot isn't even very good. The goalkeeper, like, the ball is just like straight.
Probably he was surprised, right?
But then he's got enough time to set himself and get ready, and then Rossi sort of shoots it straight, kind of almost at Walter Perez, and he kind of like dives out of the way.
It was pretty disappointing to come from the best team in the world.
Yeah. So apparently at halftime, with the score 2-1 to Italy, there was a lot of like anger and frustration in the Seleção, in the Brazilians. In the Brazilian
locker room,
they were like, I think there's a little bit of like, maybe they, because they'd had it a little bit so easy, well not so easy, but they kind of like, they'd gotten through the challenge of the USSR game, the first game where they won 2-1, and then since then have been so like comfortable, and now they were like in trouble, and like Italy were kind of frustrating them defensively. So apparently like during halftime, Cerezo, the guy who made the mistake for this goal, was like in tears in the locker room, and Socrates had to comfort him and, you know, cajole him to get him going again.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then it's 2-1 to Italy. And then the second half, there's not that much. Maybe, like, Brazil are kind of building a bit of pressure, but they're not getting that many chances.
But I do love that their style of play, they don't really forsake their beautiful football. They're still doing cheeky back heels in the midfield, and they're trying to slice through them. They don't really abandon the style.
They never seem to panic, right? They never seem to be like rushing it. There's like, this is our formula of playing, and this is...
Yeah.
They have confidence.
This very romantic idea of play beautiful football and you're going to win.
Yeah.
I think that's what carries them throughout the match, but yeah.
Yeah. And then they equalize with just over 20 minutes to go. With the goal by Falcao, and that is a brilliant goal, isn't it?
Yeah, he's just outside the box. He gets the ball and he turns his hip a bit to the right hand side, and all three Italian defenders between him and the goal all fall for it,
in synchronicity.
It's just it's beautiful,
such an elegant swing of the hip.
Yeah, and it's not even that, but he just sends them the wrong way and then turns onto the other foot, and then it's a nice, beautiful shot.
He smashes it across, and then like, if the celebrations for the first Brazilian goal are like very emotional and like driven, like they're even like, they're 10 times that for this one, right?
Yeah.
And he sprints over towards the bench, and like they're all
so relieved.
There's such relief, right?
Yeah.
Because I think like now it's like we've had the scare of like we were behind and going out for like maybe like half an hour.
Yeah.
Now like, this is, you
this
know,
is not gonna happen.
Yeah, it's not gonna happen.
This is ours now.
We're not gonna have that heartbreak thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the interesting thing is that now at this point they're through, right?
So yeah.
It's equal, the score's equal, that will put them through. And you would think then, at least from a perspective nowadays, they would, you know, defend a little more, go back towards their half of the pitch and do their business. But that's not at all what happens.
I do have a funny fact about, like, the celebrations for the score. So Falcao has, like, been chewing on a piece of gum the whole game, and when after he scores, he, like, sprints over, and he, like, has his hand up, and he's, like, and he starts to, he forgets about his gum, and he starts to, like, choke on it.
Yeah.
So he's, like, in his, after the celebrations, he's, like, trying to, like, to cough it back up.
Yeah.
And he's, like, going, like, purple, and he's, like, staring at, like, apparently, he was, like...
The substitutes.
Yeah, so staring at, like, the substitutes, and also the Italians. The Italians thought he was, like, just scowling at them, but really he was just, like, trying to stop himself.
Trying to stay alive, man.
Trying to stop himself choking on his own gum.
Yeah, Yeah, I read the same quotes.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
They were so confused, like, these intense looks, man. What's going on with this? You've scored, move on,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, get back, continue.
The banter.
But yeah, you're right, like, they have it now, it's 2-2, and then, like, but even after they have, after they've equalised, in the next, like, minute or two, they have another chance, Zico comes forward and has a shot, they have, like, one of their best moves in the match, where they kind of start at, like, the right back position and, like, move it forward, and it ends up with a Zico shot.
Yeah.
And, like, they still have, like, maybe six players or seven players above the, like, in front of the ball, creating stuff, but then just 6 minutes after they've levelled it, so they give away this, like, stupid corner. Like, right, the left back tries to head it back to the goalkeeper and it goes out.
And it's only just as well. The goalkeeper just about gets a hand to it. You can't... Mm. I mean, from the screen angle that we had, I wouldn't even know if it actually gone over.
Yeah.
So it was really unlucky from a Brazilian perspective.
Yeah, and it goes out. And so Italy have a corner. And do you want to describe this goal, Leon? Like, how you saw it?
Well, they have the corner kick, it's kicked in, and then there's kind of this poor clearance, which enables the Italian Francesco Graziani and Rossi to get a go at the ball, and then actually it's Rossi who kicks it and scores. And
yeah, it's like a scuffed shot into the 6-yard box, and like Rossi, the kind of poacher, is just like there in the middle, and he's like, he gets a touch on it and puts it in. It's remiss to like not like wonder about like the Brazilian defense, right?
Yeah,
like they're pretty free in the penalty area.
Yeah,
right?
they're wide and open, and like the guy on the post is like, it's the thing is like he's not really getting out very quick.
Yeah, he's on the opposite post, and he doesn't try and commit to playing the striker offside, and he doesn't go up to man mark him either. So he just kind of does neither and just tries to call for offside afterwards, which obviously it was an onside goal. So it was a bit of a caught in no man's land from the defender.
Brazil, after coming back twice, you know?
Right into the heart.
Yeah. They also so soon after, right?
Yeah, they've leveled. You have to imagine this. They're leading. Italy has been leading 2 times now in this match, and you've always gathered the strength to get back in it, right? Also psychologically, you've mastered the challenge, but then towards the end of the match, this just happens again.
It has to be
devastating.
Yeah. It's almost impossible to like watch this game with like in a kind of emotionless, like from like an emotionless perspective.
Yeah,
like, you're just kind of drawn to the. I don't know whether it's sort of like maybe like the mythology or like the aesthetic or like the way the Brazilians are playing or just like it feels like you described it almost as like kind of like a Greek tragedy, and you kind of know that the kind of brave hero is going to, in the end, die, but you just want, at every moment, they want there to be that little, like, some moment that will actually redeem him, or, like, something will change for their story, that they will not have to, like, this fate, which has kind of been bestowed upon them, like, that they will fail. So, yeah, after they go behind, they have, like, maybe a quarter of an hour to get level, and they have one chance. I think, like, maybe, they didn't create that much. They had like that one chance, which was the header, and then Dino's off has a brilliant save.
They also have an offside goal, but that also gets disallowed.
But so does Italy, right?
So does Italy. And Italy's looks more onside than the
actually
Brazilian one.
Is that what you read?
I read up on it, and said it was onside. So in the end, actually, Brazil was kind of lucky to have that chance at the last minute.
Where was VAR?
Sure, they'd be delighted to know. I think that's kind of how it ends. And, like, immediately,
yeah.
The Italian players are, like, almost in, like, shock. Like, I think, like the coaches and stuff are, like, so, like, you know, shocked and amazed that they've won this game. And, like, they're just, like, streaming onto the pitch. And, like, the Brazilian players have just gone off. And it's... That's the end of the story.
And apparently also the sad end of an era, right?
Yeah.
The sad end of this type of Brazilian football playing.
Mm. Yeah, so after this game, the coach sort of like is apparently sort of heartbroken by it, and he goes off to work in Saudi Arabia for a period. But then he actually comes back for 86. But by this point, kind of Zico, that great team of 82 is kind of past their peak. So Zico and Socrates aren't the players that they once were. And also after this World Cup, loads of them leave to play in Europe.
Yeah.
Whereas before they've been almost like exclusively, except for one player, they've been based in Brazil. And then after this, they leave en masse to Italy. But what's also interesting is that like the team is almost immediately like revered for their play. Like they're not treated like harshly when they return to Brazil. They return to like a hero's welcome.
Yeah.
The coach receives a round of applause from the journalist when he speaks. And you know, they're immediately like, it's not as if a position of like there's a kind of like anger at them that they haven't that they failed.
Performed, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like other Brazilian teams which have failed, like maybe like the 1950 feeling like the 1950 team, which lost the World Cup final, they're not viewed as failures. They kind of still retain the kind of mythical status. So then, after the break, we're going to discuss a little bit about kind of this kind of idea of like the mythical loser and other great teams who've like played beautiful football but also failed, and like how in some ways the kind of failure has fed into their mythical status. Unless you have any last points about what you saw from the game or what you kind of noticed a lot.
No, I think like the transition only is that this match on the one hand was regarded as one of the best matches in FIFA Football World Cup history. But on the other hand is also known as the dead of football,
yeah,
which is what we're going to talk about afterwards, right? So there is this puzzle which has to be investigated a little more.
And here's Socrates pushing the ball forward to Zico. Oh, what a turn. He threw Gentile. Socrates is in here. It's there! Socrates scores a goal that sums up the philosophy of Brazilian football.
So in this put together FIFA documentary that I watched this morning about this 1982 World Cup, what I found very interesting is it was very clear from, even though they're very sort of choreographed sort of interviews and stuff, and they're all sort of talking about like very nicely about each other, obviously, you know, there's like the Brazilian team from 1982 talking about it. There's a bit of a divide, I think, among some of them about how they, like, whether they should have maybe not stuck quite so rigidly to their ideals, like at some time, like at the point of like 2-2.
Exactly, yeah.
Whether they should have, you know, like, okay, we are this beautiful team who like to attack and try and win, but like, there comes a point when you've got to sort of like be pragmatic,
yeah,
and, you know, accept your position and sit back a bit and, you know, go for the victory and stuff. And like, this was the point which was kind of coming from Zico quite a lot, right? He was like a little bit like, yeah, I am proud to have been part of this great, beautiful team, but at the end of the day, we lost. You know, we're not winners. And then that's also kind of contrasted with something that Luisinho said. We played how Brazil should always play and like how Brazil imagines itself to play, but that philosophy would die in the 90s and after us.
Yeah.
So even though the 94 team won the World Cup, he says they also destroyed our beautiful game.
You're not going to hear many people complaining about their country winning the World Cup.
Yeah.
It's quite rare.
But
he, Luisinho said that this match in particular changed the coach's way of thinking, leading to a new destructive philosophy based on defensive counter-attacking football, and that the style of football played by the Italians against the Brazilians is what became mainstream afterwards.
Yeah, so apparently they would say, you know, stop looking for kind of more ball-playing defenders. They would go for like the big, strong ones and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think there is this very like interesting thing, you know, about how whenever it comes to a World Cup, people kind of think, oh, I want to watch Brazil because they're going to play beautiful attacking football and flair and stuff. Yeah. And obviously, it's like wrong to say that that doesn't exist anymore, because it obviously does. It's more like exists with players, but I think what is it's far more direct, right?
Yeah.
The approach
it's fast.
Is it's fast. Get the ball forward. Get people forward to score, and like Neymar beat a player, get the cross in and try to score. Whereas this is, you know, more possession based and like.
Yeah. The middle.
I feel like now the beauty of the magic happens with individuals, right?
Yeah.
Like with Ronaldinho or Neymar, like they perform, they manage to do these dribbles, these passes. Yeah. But the rest of the team is rather straightforward and more pragmatic. Versus like in 1982, you had this team of players that were so flamboyant, they were so effective, they were so had such a good touch of the ball.
They
made it work as a team. That was the impressive thing.
It's very similar to sort of like 1974 Netherlands total football, in that like everyone was comfortable in every position.
Yes.
And everyone has got, from the goalkeeper forwards, got to like be comfortable with the ball, the feet and stuff, and move around and stuff. But then like, you know, if they just had like maybe a more sort of dominant maybe centre half, or even like a goalkeeper who was a bit more good.
Right. I think the epitome of Italy maybe not being the most complete team was the goalkeeper didn't take his own kicks. They got one of the defenders to come back, and you know, you don't see that anymore. And it's kind of interesting to see a goalkeeper that can't even kick the ball wide.
That's what I did. Literally, that was my job as a defender.
There was a bit where the ball sort of went over the top, and Dino's off, ran to the edge of his box, and he tried to volley it, and he completely missed it. So like, maybe it was a good thing.
But maybe that's also being a 40-year-old at a World Cup. Is you want to protect yourself a bit, maybe.
From doing goal kicks, though.
Yeah, you never know, you never know. You never know.
Yeah. But watching like Brazil against Italy, I think at this point it's also like, it's very iconic also because it's such a sort of like contrast in some ways of like footballing culture. Almost.
A clash of systems.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like Italy is where they innovated with Catenaccio, like developing sort of a defensive system, and like, you know, the best result in football is the 1-0 win. You know, that's like the most beautiful victory, right? And you know, like Giuseppe Rossi is like the clinical front man, right? He barely has the touch of the ball outside of the box or where he scores, you know?
Yeah.
And it's such a kind of clash of beauties and stuff. And in some ways that these teams did not win the World Cup has added to their sort of mythical status, and they're more memorable, or people remember them far more than. They were more innovative or like more important for the game than the teams that actually won the World Cup in those situations. Or do you think they should have just been more pragmatic and accepted, you know, there's two teams that play this, you know, it's not just artistry. Yeah. Like there's another team that you're playing against who are trying to get the same goals as you.
It's not a self-portrait.
Yeah, exactly.
But is it not?
No,
it can be.
I think, like, say if you were someone in football that had no, you're just getting into football, and you're trying to choose a club, for example, I think that many people will be attracted to a club that they see is playing beautiful football. I think it's still considered something that people look for. No one wants to start supporting a club that they think is scrappy and doesn't quite...
Mm.
And those are usually people born into it, right? They're the ones that have to support those kind of clubs. So I think there's still, like, among fans, I think in terms of people are happy to win a scrappy 1-0, but if they're looking for a team to start supporting, people will want that a beautiful football.
Or to make a YouTube montage.
or those that are looking for YouTube montages.
Yeah, for the big play. To be fair, I think like one has to differentiate between this particular match. I think because that was the game strategy, right? Play beautifully and win. And I don't know whether it would have worked if they would have just turned it around like during the match suddenly, you know, have following a completely different philosophy.
Yeah.
So I feel like that was fine. But then, of course, because you talked about innovation, then of course afterwards, after you lose and after Italy goes on to win the World Cup, I think it's time to reassess and to see whether there has to be something systematically changed about the way you play. And I think that's only correct that then you readjust. I think that's fine, and that's how sports evolves.
I think there's room for, you know, being adjustable, right? Like I think that if teams can start the game with that intention of free-flowing football and then lock it up once it's secured, then maybe that's what we want to see sometimes.
But maybe by playing free-flowing football, that is their kind of best way of winning. Like if they were to decide to try and be defensive and pragmatic, You know, they're more likely to lose because that's not like how that's one that not what they're good at. That's not one of their strengths.
Although the argument then goes that Brazil, with their new more pragmatic approach, went on to win two World Cups, right?
Yeah.
1994 and 2002. Mm. So it did work out, right?
Yeah, but then they're not as loved in their own country as they are as the 82 team is.
Yeah, I agree. It's a hard call to make.
I think maybe that this team, if they had won the World Cup, and maybe in some ways they would not be, maybe like, would they be as remembered as much as they are now, you know?
I guess had they stayed true to like their philosophy and played the way they played back then and also won the World Cup, then yes, of course. Why no? If you play beautifully and also win, like that's max. That's what you want. But, I mean, you can turn it around and maybe they are only now remembered even though they did not win the World Cup because they played beautifully, right? Which is kind of a different path road to being remembered and make fans happy, right?
Yeah.
Even if you don't win the tournament.
Mm. Yeah. Like, no one remembers the Brazilian teams who played ugly and yet still played, like, still failed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's interesting, like, why... What kind of sets this team apart is the characters within it and how they kind of came together. And even though that they didn't win, they were able to kind of produce something that people will still kind of go back to. And also that, like, in many ways have set this kind of target for every Brazil team which has kind of come since, which they can never possibly kind of reach up to. Because no other Brazilian team can kind of on that kind of totem pole of sort of beautiful football, reach the same levels that they did, and it's an unattainable kind of comparison that they can do. Also, because of like the game changes and becomes more, you need to be more tactical.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You can't. Maybe these kind of purity kind of ways of playing before, just you know, you can't actually in the kind of more cynical and tactics based game. Achieve those goals.
But I guess it's also, say, a change in football. Say, even on club level, you have much more resources to investigate the skills of other teams when you go up to play them, right? So they have audio. They have footage to watch of the other team to see how they play, and then you adjust accordingly. So it's just this: you can't just commit to one style of play. Like coaches adjust that they know that okay, this team plays in this country, and they're. So you just adjust to each team you play, which I guess you just didn't have quite the capacity to do that before. Like you just wouldn't have the kind of knowledge available to research other teams so in depth, which I think makes the game more reactive and more the tactics more adjustable.
Although this is also sometimes a controversial issue, right? Because we had this in Germany quite a lot of times that the team was adjusted to the enemy, to the opponent, and the way they played. And they didn't fare better for it. Yeah. But then the discussion was, should they rather stay true to their way of playing instead of, you know, just adjusting to someone else's approach and someone else's strengths? So sometimes, to bring it back to this discussion that we had earlier in this team, maybe it is important to stay true to the core of what makes your play distinct.
But I guess sometimes it doesn't matter in the sense of what your play is. Like, for example, in Scotland, I support Celtic, who have kind of run away with the league for the past 9 years. And they know when they go away to play teams, the teams are just going to sit back and just try and score on the counter-attack. And then they know when they play them in Celtic Park, the teams are just going to sit back and try and not give them any chances. But then when they go away to the other stadiums, then they kind of open up a bit. And so they can't play the same game. The team is just not possible because the other team's not playing the same game. So it's a tough one to... like. It's not that they're not committed to their style of play. It's just the opponent will frustrate it in different ways depending on the context.
I think, I think it kind of boils down to our discussion that we kind of had with the Luis Suarez thing, whether there is kind of... whether we should have... like, there is something in football that we should kind of stick to as regarding aesthetic or sort of beauty... or whether, you know, if winning is your ultimate goal always, then, like, does any of it matter? Or is it just something you console yourself with because you lost, that you played pretty football?
I mean, I guess maybe you have to have, now in these days, the Wenger ball and the Mourinho parking the bus dichotomy of style. Yeah. And they both one's entertaining in the sense that sometimes you win, and one's entertaining as you get to look back on a pretty goal that you scored, even that you lose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I think it does make a difference, right? If you play beautifully, even if you go out, there's something that the fans can appreciate and that you're remembered for. So I definitely think that it has a value in itself.
Yeah,
playing beautifully is something that should be celebrated, even if you might go out.
Yeah.
Like, this Brazil team of 1982 are loved and celebrated not only in Brazil but around the world, much more than maybe like the 94 team, which won the World Cup.
Yeah.
And does that have some intrinsic value? Like, it's hard to
quantify,
right? You don't have the medals on it, but like, maybe it's something.
I mean, if everyone's bored and doesn't want to watch football, then like, who cares who wins? I guess is also a question, right? If everyone turned into scrappy and we just had all nil-nils, then maybe the game would lose fans.
Yeah, but I think also, like, it was just, like, watching it was so kind of iconic also, just to kind of, like, see almost the kind of, in many ways, like, the end of something. Like, the kind of, it felt like...
End of an era.
Yeah, the end of, like, maybe, you know, we saw it with the game that we watched between West Germany and Austria, the kind of, like, how angry people were that they kind of teams... did like sort of, you know,
some
game
kind
management
of
or like, you know, like we're professional or just like, you know, thoughtful about their goal of going to be far more important than like whatever about the fans or anyone else. We don't care how this looks, right?
Yeah.
This is how it goes. Whereas like this was the pure sort of joy but also celebration and like give the fans a show and like everything. Let's wow people as we go along.
Yeah, and I guess looking back at Wembley, it is a question of whether this is a continuum, right? Like whether with football progressing into the 21st century, this rather romantic idea of just playing the best football you can and the most beautiful football you can and playing straightforward is kind of trickling out. And now there's the more strategic, pragmatic approach, which is more about winning than about staying true to your style of play.
But also, like, beautiful football doesn't have to be, like, ineffective, like, for some, you know? It's being, like, attacking and creating stuff is something that teams, like, if that's what you're good at, then, you know, that is your best way of winning. And maybe for this Brazil team, I think it's, like, it's very simple to say, oh, why didn't you just, once you got to 2-2 and, like, be defensive and, like, accept your position? Or I think, like... Serginho said that they lacked intelligence when they did not sit back and accept the position. But you know, this is just like their most effective way of how they played, and like this was them at their best, right? Them being attacking and moving the ball and creating stuff. And if they were to try and defend and stuff, then that's not something they would have been good at.
But some people are saying that the tides are turning again in Brazilian football with the rise of tiki-taka and then the loss against Germany in the World Cup at their home place. The argument is that they're trying to, you know, refocus, do it all over again anew and see where it brings them. And so maybe there's a return for a more beautiful philosophy of football.
Mm. Okay. Well, I think we've covered everything that I wanted to cover on this game. Do you have any final thoughts, any final words on the Brazil team of 1982? Other than they have beautiful kits.
No, I mean, it is a beautiful kit. But I do like that despite the Brazil team didn't make it to the World Cup final, one Brazilian did. There was the referee was the first ever South American non-European referee to ever referee a World Cup final. So... I mean, they can be consoled in that.
They can hang
over. That should be the final notes.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot for joining us on the podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a like and a follow on Facebook, or else subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Social Podcast Network.